Honor to be proud of you for taking your endeavors to the next level. You know, it's like every season I see you getting better. You see what I'm saying? You're getting better and you're elevating. And, you know, the internet doing a lot more hating. You understand? Every time you elevate, the internet doing a lot more hate.
I'm back like I never left. The metaverse attempt to silence my worth by putting my name in the hearse. Shadow banning, censorship, verbal betrayal, and slander couldn't neutralize me. Even though they use consciousness to pan Africanism to get next to me. Those cats can never be me because they can't keep up or compete. In the end, they'll only be my carbon copy. I'm not here for the clout nor the notoriety. When it's all said and done, my legacy will remain lyrically fortified and aged like fine wine.
Welcome to Hip Hop Knowledge Shit, where guerrilla journalism meets culture, politics, and infotainment through audiovisual blogging.
Greetings, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Hip Hop Knowledge Shit. I have another special guest who does a lot of work in media. Also, he's traveled to Haiti as well as Africa. He does a lot of work. He speaks out against pandering and multiracials and just doing for self, being self-sustainable. I want to welcome to the platform Sane African.
Your brand, Sane African. What's the origins of it? What caused you to create this brand, this platform that you have been working on for the past few years?
Damn, that's a good ass question. I've been involved in the quote unquote conscious community and some of that on the outside for like the past decade. And just observing, and you know, being a student and keeping my mouth shut and just learning. As well as my personal background, I deal with psychology, behavioral health. And that's what my expertise and career is in. So it's kind of like merging the two. And it's just a lot of shit I seen that was not my liking, but I didn't want to critique because it's not my job. So I figured, well, let me create a platform that's dealing with a lot of this insanity that we see amongst us, which it is a lot of insanity. And so with that, I had a clothing company. It was called Divine Originals. Before that, I had a music company, it was like music production and management, and it was called Mental Rich. So I always dealt with the mind of knowing we smart people. And so with that, I was like, well, let's just deal with sanity and let's deal with sane, because, you know, as a European has our people, we're running around insane out here thinking that we're sane. And dealing with psychology, we know that European psychology does not work for African people. Shout out to Dr. Amos Wilson. So that's when I really started looking at things as my job and looking at just our community as a whole. And I just realized a bunch of insanity. So that's why I came up with the term Sane African. And then it kind of sounded like it should be common. You think so? I researched it, looked it up, and I was surprised that nobody was actually using that. So I took it, ran with it, and I was like, that's what I'm going to name my company. And that's why I came up with Sane African. So really the whole thing is just addressing the insanity amongst African people and trying to get our people to be psychologically sound and as Africans. As again, as I mentioned before, European psychology, Asian psychology, it does not work for us. So we have to place things in an African frame, look at things in African lens and see what works for us. Anything outside of that is insanity. And that's how I really came up with my brand.
Okay, absolutely. Talk about you went to Haiti. Speak on your journey to Haiti. And I know from previous like interactions, I know that you are of Haitian descent.
Yes, yes. By way of my father's people, his mother and her mother are Haitian people, you can say that. So I don't really, to be honest, I don't really claim it as I used to before, because even after going there, just running the Haitians, I know that I'm not seen as a Haitian. And that's cool because I'm African, so I don't really trip on that. It's a colonial title. But yeah, that's the way my father's lineage comes from. So that's why I took a travel to Haiti, just to go pay respects to my ancestors and, you know, pay respects to my grandmother. So I went about 2 years ago. It's a great place. It's a great place. I was in Port-au-Prince for a few days, about a week. And then I traveled down to Jacmel about a week. The beautiful people down in Jacmel, it was great. I got nothing but love for the people. Port-au-Prince is real different. It's kind of like I guess I would say it's like an African Tokyo. but it looked like African. There's so many black people running around, people hopping on buses, people hopping on in like the back of trucks for taxis, people hustling and bustling downtown. So it's very different, but it's a big culture shock. However, the people was great. I didn't even know I was staying in the hood until somebody told me. I stayed in Delmas 25. So Delmas is like a long strip that goes through, that cuts through all these neighborhoods. And what's crazy is like the neighborhoods are like, it's kind of like walls. It's walls all through the neighborhood. So it's people like selling art. And then you just cut down these side streets. So it's very different than being here. But overall, like the trip was great. The people treated me nice. I had to learn, I had to navigate the way of just bargaining, you know, with vendors. I met a good brother out there my first day walking around Delmas, and he was selling T-shirts, and I was just chopping it up with him. And I stayed with him the whole night. I helped him sell T-shirts out there, and that was his business. And he was just telling me the differences of being here and being in America. And I told him, you know, I was like, I had a business. I sell T-shirts and stuff. It's like, it's tiring, you know, this and that. But then he put it in perspective for me. It's saying, bro, you're not lazy. You're just tired. You're working 40 hours a week. So, but us, we have to come out here and work. So that's why we can have fun and working. And I say that to say is that going there inspired me to go outside in my neighborhood and sell my T-shirts and just set up a table because I seen them doing it. And I was just like, damn, I can do this in America. And in a sense, it is the way of having fun because you build a community. You are meeting with the locals. You're having conversations you may not have had, even if you do sell something or not. So that's what inspired me of meeting that brother and looking at him sell his T-shirts proudly and just making build a community. And that's what inspired me. But overall, the trip to Haiti was great, man. I encourage all black people, African or not, to go. It's very safe. Don't believe the hype. It's very safe. The people are great. Just keep your currency converter handy. That's what I'll say.
Right.
That's what's up, man. Talk about, you went to Africa too. So it's a lot of cash that be like, let's go back to Africa, like Garvey. I call them Pan Negro activists. They'll be on the internet talking about it, but won't even, haven't even taken the trip over there or aren't even building bridges over there to communicate with people over in Africa. So talk about your journey going over there, as well as you did some video content over there that's on your YouTube channel. So talk about that.
Yeah. So I've been to Africa. Kind of what you were saying. Let me preface this. Yeah, I've been to Africa. I don't like these, and it changed my perspective as what you said. I don't like these Pan-Africans, and I know I get a lot of smoke for these Pan-Africans because of the video content I have produced in Africa and in Haiti. I don't like these fake-ass conscious niggas who you don't even have passport. You know what I mean? Like, they don't have passports, but they talking about Africa, Africa, Africa. It's like, yo, we got to be realistic. So. I'm not living in delusion, so I want to preface with that. But yeah, I went to Africa. I met somebody. Well, I didn't really meet somebody. I had an exchange with somebody on Instagram who came in my comments. I was trying to take my head off, and I DM'd them, and I was asking questions like, "Yo, what's up?" And they're Rwandan, and I was like, "Oh, okay, that's what's up." And I didn't know they followed me. I didn't know who the fuck the person was. But after conversing for a good minute. They asked me out the blue one day, like, "You want to go to Africa?" I'm like, I thought they was bullshitting. And it's like, I was like, "Huh?" They're like, "You want to go to Africa? Me and my family are going to visit my grandmother. You want to come with us?" I was like, "Hell yeah. Why the fuck not? Like, you invite me." So I bought my ticket. I let them know that I was going, that I got my ticket. And then I was like, "All right, cool." So I actually flew over there. I missed my flight in Turkey. So it was good. I got to see Istanbul and Turkey for a whole day because I was actually supposed to meet the person in our layover in Turkey. But however, my flight came in an hour late. So I missed the flight. So I actually met them the next day in Uganda in the village. But before I got there, I want to say that it was very hospitable. the village we stayed in was probably like, I want to say like 8 or 6 hours away from Entebbe, where I felt what I came into. But the generosity of African people, they sent their cousin and the next door neighbor in a taxi all the way out to come get me from the airport the next day at like 3 in the morning.
Wow.
Yes. Yes. Cause I came in around 3:30 in the morning, there Uganda time. And I got my visa, all that once I came through, and I was waiting around for a bit. But yes, the family sent the next door neighbor, the guy who did the video with me, they sent him, another guy and an uncle that stayed in the house, which is my friend's cousin. So they all three of them came to get me. Didn't know them. Only one spoke English. So we rode a taxi all the way to Kampala. That was the main city. And then we hopped on a bus and we rode until Friday, like from 5 in the morning to the village. Well, actually to Mbara, which is about 4 hours. And then we hopped in a cab. We out in the cab and drove another 2 hours to the village. And the cabs is crazy. I felt like a Mexican. Like, it was like 8 of us in the goddamn four-door, you know? So it was crazy to see how the Africans were hustling that hard. You feel me? Like, they was really driving. They had cabs, and it was everybody get in or you get out. So it was very surreal for me. And then we got to the village, and when I got there, the family was there. The mother had a meal made for me. So we was eating. I've never experienced that. Then my friend was out picking up their niece from school. And then they came through the door and I'm like, what's up? And that was the first time we ever met. That's the first time we talked in person. Because before that, we just talked through text.
Mm-hmm.
So it was beautiful. It was beautiful. And they're like, yo, what's up? And it's like, look at us. I say that to say is like a lot of us, we don't know how to practice good relationships. And that was one of the biggest things I did learn through my friend going to Africa, is that I could have easily blocked them or told them shut the fuck up and start arguing. And none of that would have happened. But instead, I went and asked the question to them and we had a conversation, that's how I ended up getting to Africa. So I try to tell people, a lot of these Instagram Negroes, is that you should keep your options open and keep your doors open. We're all Black. We may disagree with one another, but at the end of the day, that's your brother, that's your sister, or whatever they choose to be. That's what we need to keep that open, because again, we don't know what kind of benefit these other people may have for us, or what's on the other side of creating a relationship. So that's why myself, of again, practicing sanity, I try to make sure that I keep things positive with Black people, or we keep the door open. Now that may not always suffice, you know, that may always work out on my end, but that I'm cool with that. You know, it works for me. So with that, so I was in Uganda. I stayed in a village. I stayed in Kampala a bit, but more so I stayed in a village. And this is where I get in a sense, it was a refugee village. Mm-hmm. So this is what I get. I've seen firsthand of Africans on the continent literally dying to get to America, because I was around them people. And it wasn't just Ugandans. I stayed in a place. It was Rwandans. It was Burundis. There were Ethiopians. There were Somalians. There were some people from Tanzania, it was some people from Kenya, it was some people from the Congo as well. So I was around all these people, and it was crazy to just see how they all segregated themselves based on where they were from, but they still practice community. So it was crazy, like when we go to the Ethiopian and Somalian side of the village, they was out there playing soccer. It was crazy how they was out there getting a full-blown soccer game. But then you go to like some parts where I was staying at, like the Rwandan people, some of the Ugandan people, they were playing basketball, had a full on basketball court, getting a full court game cracking. I was wild out. And then even when I came out later today, they had a tournament going, which is a video on my Instagram. They had a tournament going. It was probably like, shit, I probably said like 3,000 Black people out there, Africans watching basketball. I was wild the fuck out. Kendrick Lamar playing on a loudspeaker.
Whoa.
Over the courts. So it was beautiful, man. I was like, damn, we really doing it over here. No violence. So I seen that. But overall, the village was good, man. It was just good to see a whole mix of Africans, to bond with them, build with them. Nobody treated me foul. Nobody tried to shit on me. Like, I didn't get that experience. Now, I talked to some brothers who were trying to, like, get me to, they thought I was rich, but they were trying to get me to, like, buy shit for him. And I was like, no. But then I was fucking with him. I was like, look, well, if you take a picture, hold my flag, I'll buy you a soda. You dig? So he wouldn't do that though. He was like, tomorrow. But we didn't get to it. But it was cool. It was, the brother was a barber. His shop was right across the street from us. They was really in there cutting hair. Shit was fire, man. Fire. They had then as well, he had a charger station because of the village. He had electricity. So we pay him like 10. It was like 100. What's the currency? It's not fuck. Shillings. I think it was shillings out there. If I'm sure, I think it was shillings. 100 shillings that you pay him that. And he would just and he'll charge your phone until it was charged. Okay. Or he'll charge your charging device. But overall, man, the time in Africa was cool. The African people treated me like family. I didn't really have to pay for nothing out there. They cooked every day. The women were serving us. The men were out.
How was the food?
The food was great. It was real. I ate a lot of goat, and it was good. We went to a lot of places that the goat was fresh. I mean fresh. It was dead. They chopped it up and put it on the grill. And it came right to us. So that was my first time eating goat. We ate a lot of fucking goat out there, a lot of plantains, something like, it's not a potato, but it was like something like a potato. I forget what it was. So like that type of soup. But more so just a lot of goat, a lot of plantains and onions. That was what it is. We go to the village or we'll go outside the village and I remember we was out there, some young brothers out there shooting pool at this little food spot that we stopped at. And simple, you ask for the goat, they chop it up, put it on the grill, and it was great. So it was just great to just go around other places and get some goat and pay some vendors. And they cook it fresh for you and bring it right there on the plate, and we feast. It was beautiful.
That's what's up. Before we move on, how was the dynamic on how the community or our people over there interacted with the youth?
It was great. It was great. I don't say this, like, the youth was out there working. A lot of black people and black men in America are fucking lazy. They don't want to put no work in. So I seen a brother who was building a weight. He was building a scale himself. You dig? Like, it's speaking on the content I produce. So the content I produced out there, I did a vlog of my whole trip that you can check it out on Sane African on YouTube. As well, I did an interview with a brother, my brother Chris, who owned the shop next door. And you can check that out on SaneAfrican.com and Sane African on YouTube. Just talking about the misconceptions of America and, you know, what we're going through. But with that, the youth dynamic was great. A lot of youth, I seen kids, children building, making bricks to build a house. I've never seen that in America. I mean boys and girls. Boys and little girls were out there in the village making bricks, making mud bricks to build a house. I've seen it firsthand. I've seen 7-year-old boys herding cattle by himself. I was wild the fuck out. I was through because I was like, I can't even imagine this. You trying to get a little Negro over here to do that. He ain't going to want to do it. He don't know how to do it. And even you try to get a man over here to do that, they're not going to do it. So I seen that. I seen people running their own business. A lot of the youth were really just, they were working or running around. They were in school. They were very disciplined, very smart children, funny. So the people was great. Even one, I met a sister out there, and her family tried to marry her off to me. So I was like, yeah. So I got a potential wife out there too. And I was like, damn. And she was very respectful. Treated me with respect, called me her king and all this and that. And she invited me over to her church because she sang in the choir. So I went to church out there. The church was great. I'd never seen so many black people in one place. It was very funny because the mannerisms were still the same, as in jumping, shouting, hollering for God. It was just in a different language. But the people were very decent. Even after I told them I wasn't a Catholic or a Christian, they were kind of shocked by it. And they assumed I was Muslim, but I told them no. So I had to shut that down real quick, that I'm not Muslim, because they would assume. And I was like, no. But however, like I said, I still went to church. You know, I don't believe in it. The people was great. They treated me with love. We was able to film in the church before we got kicked out. So like, because they didn't want us recording in the church, we just started recording without saying anything. So they pulled my friend to the side, and they kicked they really kicked them out. They didn't kick me out. I just got up and left. But he was like, yeah, y'all got to get up out of here with that. But outside of that, man, the people was great. I will speak for Uganda and say visit Uganda, even the people in the main cities, the main city of Kampala, very good people. Some people saying I just put my phone up and not walking and, you know, trying to spread fear. It ain't like that. Like, people will snatch your shit, though, if you just hanging out because, it's, you know, people's broke and poor. However, the people are great. The women are beautiful. I seen black women in their essence. And I got to say this. They have booty, they have breasts, but they wasn't showcasing it. You can see it through the clothing. They had T-shirts on and just regular clothing. No weaves. Everybody hair looked like mine. A lot of the women had short hair. A lot of the women, they didn't have no weaves. It was no stringy shit until I got into the cities. But the African women out there, they had African textured hair and they was not scared to show it. So you seen locks, you seen short afros, you see even some of the women had like short fades and they look fucking great. So that was one thing that motivated me to cut my hair when I came back because I was inspired.
It's going to touch on another topic, but and then we're going to go into the pandering and panhandling topic because I know that's something that you talk about quite often. But did you see any like hybrid or light-skinned Africans over Africa?
No. And I want to make this clear. No. We seen albinos. I did an interview. Go check out my Ask an African with Arrow. We spoke about this because we seen that was quote unquote light skinned. It was clearly that they was mixed because there was white people there. It was a UN. We was over there by the UN. So I want to say that. Mm-hmm. Or if anything, if they was light, they were Ethiopians, and we already know the history behind that.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. But at the end of the day, like the light skinned people we see here, like the Tracy Ellis Ross, Jadena, I can't even think of so many motherfuckers. Armand. Drake, Shamar Moore, they didn't exist. We didn't see not one of them. It was none but people that was brown and black skin and African textured hair. None of them. There's no such thing as a light-skinned African.
So let's get into this topic because me and you both talk about this because we both have businesses. So talk about all this pandering and this panhandling going on. Like, we can use social media and YouTube as like the example.
Well, speak more about the pandering. Oh, that part, so I get an idea.
Pandering, so like appeasing to non-African people, like multiracials, you know what I'm saying? This kind of, it's gonna flow. But being able, like a lot of our people can't tell the difference who's black and who is not, basically. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Basically, that's what the pandering is. Like we can use the what I call the 2020 selection, right?
Yeah, Kamala.
Will be a good example of this. So talk about that. And the panhandling kind of goes hand in hand with the pandering.
Yeah.
In a way, like the begging regard to like somebody else come save us or you begging people to support you with the Cash App. And we can use Dr. Umar Johnson of begging and panhandling, but you really haven't built shit. Not to say the school not gonna get built, but over the past 7 to 10 years, we haven't seen anything as far as like institution building from these dudes that's lecturing, going to different cities,
right,
and just taking money and just leaving that city or that community that they're going to speak in. So speak on that.
Okay. Well, I'll say I don't like me, even though he has me blocked through his pandering. I don't have an issue with Umar. I think he's a very smart brother.
Absolutely.
And I like that he deals with psychology, but he is a little insane because, like I'll say, he had me blocked. He blocked me because he was pandering. He was pandering for Michi X. And Michi X is like she's a mulatto, but she go hard. She's like another Zaza Lee.
She from Chicago, if I'm not mistaken. Because if I'm not mistaken, I actually met her before.
Okay.
If I'm not mistaken, It was just she was impressed with the work, and she was trying to collaborate with me and got upset because I refused to collaborate with her.
That sounded like her.
That was
she been like a ghetto hood rat.
Yeah. And then her guy is a multiracial male, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay. So I've seen her on YouTube going at Tariq. I don't follow her. One of my elders follow her and shit, and you know, look, check out her work. And he'd be going, me and him going back and forth about her. But yeah, Meech has like an old hood rat at the end of the day. And Umar had put a post up talking about our sister Meechy X. Don't turn our back on our. He's like light skinned, and he was like a mixed race African and still an African. And I commented, I was like, what? Like, bro, as a psychologist, you should know better than that. There's no such thing as a mixed race African. Now, I understand the context, but as the African, what we mean when we say African, that's synonymous with black. So you can't, if you automatically mixed race, you're not an African, you're mixed. Mm-hmm. So he blocked me off of that. That was like 2 years ago. But I say all that to say, a lot of people pander to black women, they pander to multiracial people, or they don't really. They shit on dark-skinned people, if we want to say that in a sense. And I hate that term, dark-skinned, but I have to use that term right now. So basically, they shit on African people and try to keep a wide spectrum to keep their options open. A lot of men do it because they want access to multiracial pussy. I understand. Myself, I do the Who Is Black stuff because it's fun, it's cool, and I like to put out Who Is Black. I don't care if I lose some pussy or not, like, by a mixed woman. It don't bother me because I'm not doing this to get pussy. So a lot of people are pandering to keep their options open with black women. Like right now, you have a lot of the black woman is God. And it's like, bro, that's not true. But a lot of people do that. A lot of multiracial people do that. So they can get black women's draws and win them over because of, sadly, we black and, you know, that's a woman. They're impressed with us. They're emotionally different. So women tend to have low self-esteem about being black or being, quote unquote, dark skinned. So a lot of these men who are predators, they pander to that to get, like, it's a little rapper, a multiracial rapper. You know, he panders to black women to, you know, get him to buy his music, support his music. And all he rap about is, I guess, pro-black shit. I never heard a track. I think I heard a snippet. But all he rap about is pro-black shit. So black women are going to support that. We know black women spend money. We not stupid. Yeah,
greatest example to me.
J. Cole, and I'm talking about, we're talking about examples. I'm not going to say the nigga name, but if you hear this, he'll know who we're talking about.
right, you know what I'm talking about.
Real life examples. So, you know, he does that, where you have the Haitian guy, I'm going to use real life examples, slandering me, who uses my content to pander to black women while shitting on me because his woman is multiracial. So it doesn't make sense. And again, I'm saying like this, because as we just prefaced before, as there's no such thing as a light-skinned African. And some of these people know these things. They know these women are mixed. However, to stay relevant and to not lose money, not lose donations, what we're going to go into next, you know, the Cash App, they don't say nothing. So it really hinders us. You can't trash Kamala and then you post up a woman who has a Mexican father just because she looked good. Now, I'm not under the pressure that, all non-black women are ugly. I'm not ignorant. That's niggas talk. Women are appealing, but I'm still smart enough to know this isn't a black woman. Yeah, she looks good, and I just say it like that. So we don't have to lie to these women or lie to our people who get non-black women because they're non-African. They may be black in America, but are they African? As we just said, I went to Africa. If we dropped them in Africa, would they blend in? 9 times out of 10, no. And we have a lot of Negroes here who have not been outside their block or outside their country, outside their state, and they feel they're so smart. But again, we drop them in Africa. Would you blend in or would you be called Wazungu? Straight up. And that's really the question. So again, what that goes into, you have brothers out here and sisters, because I know a few, begging in their motherfucking bios, begging on their page. And I was like, I addressed this when I was on vacation because, again, you said we're business owners, right? I've never took money from nobody, ever. Everything I've produced and everything that I've put out or as clothing-wise or as content-wise, I pay for that out of my own pocket. I've never asked for a donation. I only, and I'll say this, one person wanted to donate to me. It was a woman. It was a Haitian woman. I'll say this. Let me put this out for the people I hate. I say I hate immigrants. It was a Haitian woman. And because she reason she wanted to donate to me was because she bought a shirt from me. And I gave her a shirt, but then I put an extra one in there for her. Just on some, on the fly, on some love shit. Mm. And when she got the package, she was just ecstatic that once she liked it, the good business within, I gave her extra shirt. So she offered to donate to me. And I told her, I don't take donations. You could do whatever with that. And she was so adamant, like, no. I give it to her. I was like, well, I am in the area of buying a microphone. If you want, if you insist, you can do that. And it was $40. She cashed at me $40. That was the only time I took money from somebody. That was it. And she offered. I've never asked nobody. I've never put a cash app in my bio to donate to this, donate to that, donate to what? We men, we should be fucking working. And I'm saying all that. I'm not gonna lie. I took money one time and she offered, and they know who they are. But it was a Haitian woman. Salute to her. Salute to the sister. But these people are begging. Even you see it online, just like it's something YouTube, donate, get my likes up, donate to this, donate to that. And it's like, yo, man, I don't know what's up with this new era of niggas begging. Mm-hmm. Like, we got too many begging ass niggas out here, especially in the conscious community and just or the pro black community, whatever they want to say. Niggas begging. Like, what the fuck? That shit is crazy, bro. Do you see how many people are begging in their bios? Begging constantly in their story, and you still ain't produce shit. Mm-hmm. Like, I can see if you have an institution or something like that, that's what's up. I would donate to that, or I donate to, over people in Africa. But then even some of them, like, they begging because they start depending on the donations, and that's mm-hmm. when shit changes mm-hmm. because you're gonna piss people off. You can't talk about hell, let's deal with the man. You can't talk about the reality of dealing with women because the content can't be the same. You can't make certain statements. You can't talk about light-skinned people. You can't talk about Malcolm X's mother not being black. All mm-hmm. black women are queens. You know what I mean? So I know, like me personally, I know I lose money. The shit I talk about. I know mm-hmm. I lose. I do. Even with the Negro slandering me in the background who has me blocked but didn't want to meet up. When I was in the city, I know I'm losing. I done lost like fucking 50 followers this past week of him running some campaign in the background. I had no knowledge of. I was curious, like, why is my followers dropping? But it's that because I fund myself. Everything is out of my pocket. I don't have no partners. Mm-hmm. I don't beg for donations. So I can do what the fuck I want to do. And so people will utilize that to tear you down. In a sense, like, you look at somebody as, like, Tariq Nasheed. Now, I don't agree with fully on him on his dating choices. That's all in all. However, he funds most of his shit himself. And so look how much hate he gets for all he has produced. Now, he'll let people contribute to Hidden Colors and shit, but that's, again, it's a donation. You give what you give. Same with Umar. I've donated to Umar twice years ago. I don't donate no more, but I hope he get what he get. We don't have to mm-hmm. give nothing to these people. Mm-hmm. But now it's a culture of niggas giving so much and supporting them because they lazy. Mm-hmm. They lazy. As I just prefaced to being in Africa, niggas ain't doing no motherfucking work in the real world. So you think I'm going to just give money and you need to do what you need to do. Same like with this election. And so to go back into the original question which you asked, and just the pander and the donation, that's really what I came to what I came with the Saint African, and I do my own content now because mm-hmm. it was just a lot of shit I didn't like, and I was like, well, let me do something.
What?
Let me showcase what I want to see. And that's the main thing that we need to do that, and our people don't understand. When you finance yourself, you can do what the fuck you want to do. And then you secure it. Yes. And when you ain't dependent on nobody, you can say what the fuck you want to say. So I can talk about dating as a black man, my late 20s, early 30s. I can talk about the reality, of dating, been through relationships, things women do, seeing people get divorced, things men do, what we need to work on. Mm-hmm. But most niggas ain't going to talk about that because it may look like you're attacking black women. You hate black women. No, motherfucker. We obviously, as we see with this election, we obviously are not in agreement on a macro level. So it's like, what the fuck? Like, we need to really look at the dynamics of what's going on and get out this goddamn pro-black bubble, you know, that keep us safe and go, help us go to sleep at night. But again, you got niggas serving in Master's Army, serving in the military. You got niggas who are cops talking that shit. But it's like, bro, you're arguing with black people and got so much smoke with black people. You're mad at Ice Cube, but you sitting right there with the cracker all day that you claim to hate so much.
Yeah.
It's insanity, brother. Again, so it's, we have too many people living in delusion and they're taking donations to motherfucking to keep pushing bullshit. So I would ask, let me ask you a question.
Sure. Go ahead.
Do you notice a lot of these, a lot of the pro-blackity black, all this, all that Africa talk, black men, do you notice that their children are lighter than them? Have you noticed that trend?
Yeah. In most cases, they usually don't even show their family or their spouse. It's something I noticed in regard to just posting their family. I remember when you did the Who Was Black, and you was like, you challenged people to post their family. Mm-hmm. And I think before my page got shut down, it was me and a few other people that did it, but it was little to no people. Mm-hmm. At max, it might have been 10, minimum probably 5 that I was following. So, yeah, but a lot of people not going to post their parents or their grandparents, you know?
Right. I just remembered that. I totally forgot. But, that's real shit.
And then you put me up on the ACBN, the African Center Biological Naturalism, with like, mm-hmm. and that, like, I had kind of a real perspective on it, but like, that enlightened me even more, you know what I'm saying? Because mm-hmm. he taking the heat too, the brother that run that YouTube channel.
Mm-hmm. Becazita.
Yeah, Becazita. But a lot of people not going to speak on it. This is a good way to transition to talk about your Ask an African series. Like, how did that start?
How did I start that? The Ask African series is basically
You had went to Vegas,
mm-hmm.
and then shortly after that, you interviewed the brother Khalid Dessalines.
Yes.
That's the lanes, and then you interviewed a couple other brothers. Y'all had went to Vegas for an event. What event did y'all head out to Vegas for?
I'll go back to the Ask African after. For the event in Vegas, we had a discussion, like a live panel discussion. I was invited to. Shout out to Khalid, good brother. We had a panel discussion, and it was just basically, why we don't interracially date? That was the main topic. So a lot of the questions was, what do we like about black women? What makes us stay with black women? Why do we choose black women? Why we don't want to date outside our race? And just the importance of that. So we had a live conversation with that, me and about 4 other brothers with Khalid. So it was dope. We recorded it. I don't know if it's going to come out or not because, it was some technical difficulties kind of after space. The audience was cool. They enjoyed the audience that was filling in the place because, like, the place was opening up for the night spot. But it was cool. The women enjoyed it there. We had a good conversation. And then I shot an interview just impromptu with them right after it because we was just soaring off the energy. And it was good. You can check out that interview on Saint African on YouTube. It's called Black Man Build. Then I shot another interview with right before we went on stage. I shot an interview with the young brother Adolfo. So you can check that out. Young brother was dropping them bombs. He's dropping them bombs. It's always good. So shout out to him because it's great to see young people that know what time it is. You know, it's a beautiful thing. We did that. We out in Vegas. The Ask African series, really, it started, the first one I did was in New York. And I did that off the fly because we was with some Israelites. We was in time, we was on 42nd Street one night, and we had passed up some Israelites. and we was talking to them, and it was a beautiful exchange, because the Israelite that was out there was the brother who was at the stand-in, that Indian thing last year. You remember when those Indians and those white people had a standoff in D.C.?
I ain't heard nothing about that.
It was, I'm sure it was last year, or it was at, yeah, it was last year. They was in D.C., and like, remember, it was a little white boy who was laughing at the laughing and shit, and he went viral because he had the Make America Green, Make America hat on.
Okay.
And he did that. But basically, it was a dude, it was an Israelite out there who was flaming them crackers up. Like, they was out there flaming the crackers up. So when we got to 42nd Street, it was him. It was him. It was his camp. And then my homeboy recognized him. It was like, oh, shit, that was you. Like, yo. So we saluted him and everything, like, off top. Israelite or not, like, multiracial or not, you was out there flaming them crackers up, boy. Salute to you. You know what I mean? Like, we got to give credit where credit is due.
Right.
So it was all love, this and that. And then the dude went into the guy that was speaking, not because it wasn't the dude, he was on the sides recording. The guy that was speaking went into some anti-African rhetoric. Like, and I'm recording this shit, and I'm like, yo, what the fuck? what the fuck? So he was like, yo, we got pork chop skin, and they black, and this black man behind him. This is a mulatto. You look Spanish. It was black man behind him. And I'm like, yo, this is the insanity we was just talking about. You got this mulatto flaming down African people, really black people at the end of the day, and you got black man behind him. And in a sense, he talking about your ass, but just because y'all think y'all Israelites? Like, what?
Right.
So, like, so really, we was confused. and then my boy, he got mad twice, and like he left, and then he had came back this time. But when he started doing the anti-rhetoric, he got mad, and like he got mad, and he went into the like the you know, the space they be in, and they try to keep that in like in front of them. You don't really want to cross the line and shit. He went in there and got mad and was like, yo, y'all gonna stop this. So we almost had to bang the fuck out. Like, it got real fucking hectic. Like, it got real hectic, and I had to get up. I had to break the shit up in front of it. Luckily, I didn't get punched or anything of jumping in. Like, yo, y'all niggas need to chill. So it was funny as fuck. But it's just like, yo, but we shouldn't be getting mad off rhetoric, but I get it. So we broke out because the shit was about to get real hectic. So then I start recording them. And I was like, he was mad. So I was like, fuck it. I just started recording him. I was like, yo, so what did you think of that? Because the whole time I told him I was going to interview him. And the nigga was like, no, I'm not doing no interview. So I just did. yeah. So after that, I just did that. And I was like, yo, what's up? And we aired it out. And it's a good way of getting it out, you know, getting that energy out. So we aired it out. And that's how I shot my first Ask an African, you know. And then I shot my second one in Uganda. I mean, in Uganda, if I'm sure that was two. I shot my third one out here in Oakland. And so I got a few that I'm working on, but they really go into the Ask an African is really just showcasing black people who are doing great things in our communities that we just don't know about. And it's not about, everybody is not on camera. Everybody is not flashing guns on Instagram. Everybody is not wearing red, black, and green colors. We still black. We still working in many sectors. Some people working in government. Some people working in schools. Some people working in behavioral health. Some people are working in finance at our firms. Some people are lawyers. Some people are working in hospitals as nurses, doctors, technicians, really saving black people. And they're not wearing a cape, or they're not bragging or boasting about it. So we forget shit like that. That we can think of if we had black teachers or black principals that was working at us, so still a white school, but we here and he's looking out for us.
Right.
We're saving black people, and that's where Ask Africa came from, which is really showcasing black people who are doing great things, and you know, giving them a light and allowing them to speak of what they see firsthand. As in, I'm sure yourself, you can talk a lot about what's going on in the school system, as in with your book.
Right, absolutely.
So you can speak real as an expert about things like that. I myself, I work in behavioral health, so I'm dealing with social services. I'm dealing with politics. I'm dealing with, I'm looking at the city and county line. I'm dealing with the homelessness. I'm dealing with youth. So when I speak on policies and things like that, a lot of Negroes get confused because sadly, many of them are not in these sectors. And they just, you know, they garbage men, knock the shit on them, or they working in warehouses. So you really wouldn't know how these things are affecting us. You really wouldn't know how us not having a language or being on code, as they say, affects us politically or with services like getting housing with all these baby mamas niggas is creating. So it's like we complain about the lack of access, but we don't want to approach the conversation. And we just talking Africa, 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 you know, but it's like nobody has went yet. Nobody has that passport. So we just supposed to opt out and drop out of everything and just complain. But the shit is still affecting us and moving. That's what I don't get. So that's what the Ask an African really comes from, of just showcasing cool black people who's really on code. They're just not running around saying they're on code. And they're in these institutions. So, you know, they can speak about what's going on. Like right now, my next Ask African that I'm planning to shoot is with a sister. And she works at a school with, I think, she's a teacher. She's a special ed teacher at a school over in Sacramento. And the stuff basically you talk about, Dr. Umar talks about, she's dealing with it firsthand with black children.
Amos Wilson, too.
So that's why I want to have a conversation with her. And she don't run around with no flag. She don't. She don't do all this and that. She's a Christian woman, believe in God, but she's on cold like a motherfucker.
You know, that's a good actually transition because on cold. So, this is one of the things I want you to talk about. Cause you read Shahzad Ali's "The Black Man's Guide to Understanding the Black Woman." Mm-hmm. And you did a video on your Instagram, which I'm going to bring it up to you all the time. You need to upload that to your YouTube when you get a chance. What are your thoughts on that book? Like, in particular, for those who aren't familiar who Shahzad Ali is, speak on, like, her body of work, particularly that book.
Man, that book is fire. Every black boy or man needs to read that book. Women too, and really get a check for themselves. But every man needs to read that book. It is one of the most important books that should be required reading. And again, going back to pandering, nobody would really say that because she's critiquing women. But it should be up there with Amos Wilson's Developmental Psychology of the Black Child. It should be up there with Black-on-Black Violence. It should be up there with Destruction of Black Civilization. It should be up there with Civilization of Barbarism. It should be up there with The Iceman Inheritance. But it's critiquing black women. So people are not going to put that up. So again, that book is fire. I learned so much about relationships. I learned so much of just dealing with black women. I realized that I was being gamed, and I'm not saying it as like I've been played, but they're running game on you because they've been trained to run game on us because society runs game on black men. So they're playing games. The attitude, the combativeness, like even at one point she talks about how black women do train their daughters, which is true. They train their daughters to lie to their fathers or to lie to men because you keep this between me and you. Don't tell your father. So you're instilling in a child to not respect men already, and they don't realize that. Same as we've heard many things, and the greatest thing that I had about that book is that I was reading it going to work, going back and forth to work, and women seeing me reading the book and were so interested. So we had a lot of conversations with black women about that book, and they a lot. all of them really agreed to the things she pointed out, saying, yeah, my mom did say this. My mom did do this. I didn't even think of it that way. Not that they were going to change or anything, but they just, they never seen it presented like that. That mm-hmm. your mother is telling you to lie to your father. Your mother is telling you to think for yourself, be about yourself, because she's been hurt. So you're already instilling that in a little girl. And we see the results in our society today with our women. They have really bought into this feminism stuff. Look at Megan Thee Stallion. Nicki Minaj, how she was. She used to act. So it's like, I don't want a man. I don't want this. So what we really brought it home was, we remember in the 90s when Shahrzad Ali was promoting her book and stuff, and black women was taking her head, trying to take her head off and was mad. Now I get it. Before, I didn't get it because I didn't read the book. But she really exposed the game. But the problem is that our women don't get, which is happening now with the election, they don't realize they're going against themselves and our race when they go against black men. And we try to see what are the problems, but you want, quote unquote, freedom and independence. We don't have that as a race. So we need to get this shit together, but they don't see it that way because the white man is throwing them benefits, jobs. They'll take care of them if they leave the family, but they don't even see that that's destruction of family, which should be the first, the foremost. So we get it. Like, oh, you know, it's really that old Malcolm X quote, the black woman is the most unprotected, disrespected. Nigga, that was a 19, probably 50-something, 60-something. That shit dead. Black people are the most disrespected and protected. Like, they are bought into the gender game.
It's crazy that you bringing that up because I think, was it the BET Awards when Meg Thee Stallion used the, before she started performing? I didn't watch it, but it was all over the social media sphere from Facebook to Instagram to Twitter.
Right. No, it was I think it was Saturday Night Live. But yeah, I know what you're talking about, that bullshit. It's like, even that, how you gonna play that quote when you up there shaking ass and you got a who hates yourself, but you got weed wigs on? So it's like, you're free. They don't even realize they are free. Like, I kind of got roasted in my class last week about this because we was kind of talking about this in my Black Studies class, and I told them straight up, I was like, yo, the government take care of women. Like, And because it's like they want to focus fully on themselves and separate from the black man. And it's like they have bought into the gender intersectionality shit. And it's like, yo, that ain't got nothing to do with us. Like, we black. Ain't no, because then again, you don't see men out here saying this is for black men only. We only worried about black males' rights. That's just one, that sound gay. Two, it's very selfish. Three, it's like, yo, how can we separate ourselves as a gender when we got all this out here? So the women don't realize they're basically going against, you're anti-black once you take that on. And a lot of dudes, they don't want to speak on it. I mean, and it goes to the pandering. They don't speak on it because a lot of them, they living off women. Like, their woman probably make more than them, or they got kids, they on child support, this and that. So again, as I was saying earlier, to close this out, I don't have those problems because they are problems. I'm not on child support. I don't have no baby mothers. I don't have children. I support myself and I work. So it's like, yo, I can say what I want to say. These brothers, because it's really on us, man, say nothing because they're dependent. Not the white man's fault.
I agree wholeheartedly. I just had a conversation about dating. Because my mother, at this point, she wants grandchildren. And all my cousins, they having children. So, but the women I meet are really posing as quote-unquote pro-black or pan-Africanist, quote-unquote. But they practice feminism behind closed doors. Mm-hmm. So to me, they want my money, or they want me for sex. And then after they know how I am, they get mad at me because they want me to change. But then when I say, oh, I don't fuck with feminism, I don't fuck with that shit. Or they have a gay best friend. They think me and this dude can have a conversation. We don't have anything in common. So why would I continually engage in conversation? And whatever your sexual orientation is, that's your personal choice. That has nothing to do with me. Right. But me, I'm not going to put myself in a position where if that's your best friend, cool. If you're not going to get rid of them, that's fine. But I'm not going to subjugate myself to the stress of dealing with you being in my ear and barking at me about
right.
not accepting what you want. So go find what you want. And then the craziest thing is, it's a lot of women, I've been asked this before, it's crazy, that I had a, I guess you could call it a situationship, but I have had women on several occasions ask me, can they be a bulldagger?
What?
Like, and I'm looking like, yo, this conversation is done, whatever we supposedly have going on is done.
Yeah,
and just trying to bring up, there's a difference between reality. I said this is something I'm thinking on doing like a series on my YouTube channel calling it Reality versus Insanity. Mm-hmm. Because we live in like in what I call intellectual fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
Because we believe that somebody is going to save us. We could use this selection as an example. Like, niggas love living in fantasy land.
Right.
What Dr. John Henry Clark and his A Great and Mighty Walk called showbiz liberation. Mm-hmm. Be talking what they going to do online, what the woo bam, what they would do in certain situations if they get into an altercation with the pigs.
Right.
And be like, if that was me, I wouldn't let woo bam.
Right. I'll shot the motherfucker.
I wouldn't let them do that to me on my job, but you working for these crackers.
Right.
You working for a 9-to-5, but you on the internet telling niggas, quit your 9-to-5.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Then you begging them for their last $10. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, we got to get out of this thing of like being with the insanity is like at an all-time high. This is why I call it culture confusion. It's funny how I'm always getting put in Instagram jail, but these so-called fake-ass pseudo niggas on the internet on Instagram will plagiarize my whole shit, saying that they quote-unquote a scholar and with these labels and shit. Like, and at a certain point, like when I first was in school, and I got railroaded from academia speaking on how I speak, like how me and you talk.
Mm-hmm.
I talk like regular, like when I'm in academy, when I was in academy, I was speaking like this. Like, I'm not changing my lingo or my language
right.
to fit what the system wants. I'm going to continually be myself, but speak on like the idea of the difference between reality and insanity.
I mean, it's kind of what we just said, like reality, like motherfuckers is we in reality. We gotta live in reality. And that's kind of why like I don't really deal with the I don't really deal with like the pro black community no more. Like, or whatever they want to be called, the Pan-African community, council community. I don't really deal with people inside of that because, like, it's a lot of insanity. And it's not, nobody's not living in reality. Like, I guess I used the example. I just had an exchange with a brother, with a young brother yesterday online because he put a post up one day, like, shitting on Ice Cube using Kali. He was, like, basically Kali Muhammad, like, and then he using this quote. We know what Khaled said. We get it. Ice Cube still thrived after that. We get it.
Right.
But you're using Khaled words, shitting on him. And I'm like, bro, you wasn't even alive during this time. What the hell? So he was like, oh, right. That nigga's a coon. That nigga's this. And it's like, okay, so you're not aware of everything Ice Cube has done for black people since 94 when Khaled said that. He was valid. Khaled was valid. You ran, got it. But he didn't. He still put on a fight. So The next day, I seen Willie D. Yesterday, I seen Willie D. had put this post up. I seen it from this one dude. So I screenshot it and then I put it up. And it was just like basically, and he's right. Like, Ice Cube done employed hundreds of black people. He is. He employed hundreds of black people. He done been fighting and speaking against the system since he came out. Never wavered. He had a black wife for 30 years. Never had a scandal. So he's doing things right. Like, as I was referencing with the Ask African stuff, it's black. Like, my man I just shot, my man Savalis from Ask African 6. Mm-hmm. He been married a decade.
Mm-hmm.
Black wife. Two kids. Two beautiful daughters. My godchildren. He been married a decade. I don't know too many niggas. I don't know a lot of niggas in the conscious community our age that actually that say black woman is God that have a wife over a decade.
Mm-hmm.
They relationship, they on child support. So again, back to the question, they living in insanity. They're not living in reality. Because there are black people out here who are doing the things we said we supposed to be doing, or we try to show biz and showcase that we're doing, but you're not. And that's the reason I shot that Ask African with him too. Because again, he just took his wife to Africa and his two mm-hmm. children. No, he don't wave an RBG flag. He don't.
Yeah, talk about this, because if I'm not mistaken, you was like, you don't wear dashikis and the cultural garb. So speak on, we could showbiz liberation. Perfect transition.
Mm-hmm.
As far as all these dudes that's wearing these dashikis online, mm-hmm. they participate in Kwanzaa, which you should be celebrating in Gozo Saba 365/24/7 anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the year, it became, I can't remember what, I think it might have been Kill Clinton that made it like a national holiday at the end of the year. And mm-hmm. Trump, every president does like a message on Kwanzaa on the White House website. They do like a memo
okay.
for it.
I didn't even know that. Okay.
Yeah, but basically, the end of the year, you see all these people celebrating Kwanzaa.
Mm-hmm.
And I call these niggas Kwanzaa niggas. You know what I'm saying?
Uh-huh.
But these dudes be out here with the dashiki, you know, I call it cultural Halloween costumes.
Mm-hmm.
You know
mm-hmm.
what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. They be out here with the dashiki on, got the UNIA flag in their background, but aren't living up. They just using social media like as a facade or front.
Mm-hmm.
Daily reality when they're really living in insanity.
Yeah, just what we were just saying. Like, yeah, I don't wear all that. I learned that when I went to Africa, because they're not walking around in that shit. They're not. Or they're not. It's, and I've been kind of knew that because my dating history, I've really been dating. I date mostly, I guess, in my adult life. I've dated more continental Africans than not, or people of first generation. So I've kind of been around that. And I see they don't be really wearing that shit like that. Like, they don't. They dress like, they dress normal. And even in Africa, they weren't wearing that. But then I learned, it's like, yo, bro, at the end of the day, that's why I have Sane African. We are Sane Africans. We don't have to be something that we already are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but that's a lot of American Negroes, and that's how we get undermined and utilized by a lot of these foreign flag Negroes, because they know we don't like, we live in here in America's history, of America's superpower, and we don't want to attach ourselves to it. We're running from it. Got it. However, at the end of the day, we need to, man, we got Nat Turner, Denmark Vesey, Ida B. Wells, you dig? Like, hell, LeBron, I don't like the nigga, but still LeBron, like, Jesse Owens, mm-hmm. we produced a lot in this motherfucking country, more than other places.
Mm-hmm.
We should be proud of that. Not that we're American, but proud of what our people have done here in America, still with the white man's foot on our neck.
Mm-hmm.
Opposed to other places, you know, I know people may get mad about it, but fuck that. We should be happy. We should be proud for all we have produced. Hip-hop, they took the instruments, we produced something on our words. You know how many geniuses there are out here that can spit a dope rhyme? That take a lot. I mean, sports with shit like that, science, all the inventions that we have produced for the world, African Americans did that. Like fucking stoplights, refrigerators, freezers. Like fuck on. Like we should be happy that our people have been geniuses with the white man's foot on our nest, and we still thriving. And niggas want to throw that shit out. I'm not doing that. So it's like you're saying, these niggas trying to be African. We are Africans. We here in America. Claim that shit. Like, unless you're going to Africa, we need to leave that alone. So go back to your original question. Niggas, in reality versus insanity. That's insanity. Mm-hmm. You don't see Chinese people doing that shit. Now, I get it. We want to be proud. But after a while, you kind of get out that phase, like, of the cultural, like the culture, the showbiz, the cultural confusion, because you want to be walking around and RBG'd out and all this and that. We got it. We know who we are, or even the dashikis. And even with that, like, remember when dashikis was hot like 3 years ago, everybody, they were selling them in Foot Locker. Right? You remember?
I don't know how it is out in Oakland, but in Chicago, they be selling them in beauty supply stores.
See, remember when like the dashiki was hot at the time? You had street niggas on the block wearing dashikis. Jeez,
that's
when I know I was like, yo, I'll never put a dashiki on, nigga. I'm straight. But it's like that, like you look crazy because you're not even wearing it in the right fashion. That shit is like some shit you wear like to an event. You know. Cause I have two. Yeah, I got two that I got actually in Uganda, and they was dope. Mm-hmm. But I don't wear them. Like I don't wear them just to wear them. Like I'm cool. I dress normal. You feel me? Like me in America, I really niggas can do what they want. I just dress. I dress how I want to dress. I don't need to wear all that shit to prove a point. Like ask me a question, and I'll prove my point.
Yeah, and it's crazy that you're saying that. I've watched a lot of Amos Wilson lectures. I don't ever recall him wearing a dashiki.
Right.
Or I don't recall, and this show, the person that you love as a black man, our warrior ancestor, Dr. Khaled Muhammad. So speak on him, because I know you went to New York when you was in New York. You visit his grave site. So speak on that. Speak on how people are spelling his name wrong. How they need to put, as Birdman said, they need to put some respect on his name.
Some respect on Baba name. Yo, real fucking shit.
But speak on that. Speak on.
He's the greatest.
The influence.
The greatest. He's the greatest. He's the greatest that ever walked these shores, ever. The greatest black man I know, that I wish I could have met. I mean, what more can I say? He was the truth. Like, I don't give a damn he was Muslim. I don't give a damn that he was an NOI. Fuck all that. He was a black man who did what he needed to do, and he galvanized the people, and his message stands strong. He never compromised. Never. Mm-hmm. So I look at him. He's one of my favorite that we produced. One of them, along with Nat Turner. You know, brother never compromised for nothing. Even looking death in the eyes. They done shot that man. He name-checked them Jews. Inspired so many artists with his message. Mm-hmm. Ice Cube is not Dr. Khaled Muhammad. So I get it. But death certificate still woke the masses up.
Right.
Machiavelli woke the masses up. He on them albums. Like, and it's like, we forget that. Like, not to change the topic, even like Kanye, niggas was shitting on Kanye last year. Kanye put Marcus Garvey on that one album with Kid Cudi. Fuck with niggas.
Here.
Yeah, like, and niggas, fuck all that. You put Marcus Garvey on a record in 2019 that's going out to the world. That's mm-hmm. big. We don't look at the shit niggas is doing. Like, you could have put mm-hmm. anybody. So I say, I have to say, like, mm-hmm. yo, these brothers' messages is fire. So back with Khalid was the greatest. He didn't give up. He stayed strong all the way to the day he died. The way he went out, that's why I'm very cautious of the women I date.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm gonna leave it at that, because that should get me hot. I don't like that. But it's a telltale of, we have to make smarter decisions as black men. Even some of our greatest have been compromised by their own women.
Well, yes.
You know? Absolutely. And then I say, leave the son alone. Like, we don't know what he's seen, but he's seen a lot. He's not his daddy.
Right.
So it's like, niggas right. trashing the son. Like, if you respect that man, respect his children.
Yeah.
All he did for us, at least respect his children. You know, so
yeah.
that's again, the insanity, brother. That's the insanity. How you trash these great man's children? Yeah. And that's when it goes into question to, what have you produced? Like what exactly. have you done? Like I was saying with the little brother with Ice Cube, what have you done? What have you produced? He couldn't answer mm-hmm. the questions. He said that's deflection. It's not deflection, because once you tearing somebody else down, to not be a hater, and I hate that term, but to not be a hater, you're tearing somebody else down. So the question is, well, what are you doing that makes mm-hmm. you dislike this? Because right now you mm-hmm. hating.
Mm-hmm.
You hating. Or what makes this negative of what they're doing? You know, if they're mm-hmm. not negatively impacting black people, what is your problem? So if they're negatively impacting black people, how you feel, what are you doing that's positively impacting black people besides running your motherfucking mm-hmm. mouth?
Mm-hmm.
Posting memes.
Right.
And that's again, it's the insanity, brother. It's insane. So Khalid was a giant. He was God. And yes, put some motherfucking respect on Baba's name. There's two L's. I'm so tired. I'm not even tired. I actually sit back and laugh when I see niggas spelling Khalid's name with one L, or they naming their children Khalid with one L. I'd be like, yo, dude, he wildin'. He don't even get it.
Because I didn't know that until I seen the video. I was like, oh, shit. Like, I was ignorant, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I didn't know. I was unaware.
That's why I put it up today. Because people think, a lot of people assume, like, I get it from a lot of women I date or this and that, like, I think I'm always right. I'm not right about everything, but I deal with, like, people say that I deal with belief. I always tell them I deal with truth and science. That's it. I deal with science. Mm-hmm. Either it's true or it's not. It's false. If it's false or it's a lie, or we don't know, and that's cool. But if I speak on something, it's something I know. Otherwise, I ask questions to get more information.
Right.
So again, like, I know his name spelled with two L's. So when niggas is telling me no, it's not, I was like, bro, I have a video at his grave. It's on his tombstone. He got two L's on this motherfucking name. So it's like. And dude didn't go watch the video. I know he didn't. That's why I threw it up, too. For anybody that's seen it, they think I'm just talking. I'm not just talking. Right. I know what I'm talking about. So it's like, but don't nobody want to give me your credit. And that's cool. But the point is, we just going to put it out there and let the pendulum swing. But we got to correct our people when it's an error.
Yeah.
And that's a big error. Yeah.
And much respect, because in that video, if I'm not mistaken, it was pouring down rain.
Yeah, it was thunderstorming out there. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you did ask me about going to his gravesite. So, yeah, I went to his gravesite mm-hmm. the week before I went to Africa. I wanted to go there to get his blessing. That's why I was like, well, damn, I got some money saved up. Let me go to New York. It would be dope if I go to New York and then go to Africa just to see his grave, because I found where it was at. And I was just like, okay, I'm going up there. So luckily, just that time, it was my homeboy's. It was his child's first birthday. So it was like a double thing. But that's why I went up there. It started raining once I got up there, and it was thunderstorming. And I was like, man, fuck all that. I ain't turning back. Like, we here.
Right.
So I was out there solo. I couldn't find Malcolm X's grave. It was somewhere near there, but I couldn't find it.
Yeah, I think Amos Wilson's grave is up there as well. So I'm heading to New York. So when I go up there, I'm gonna go up out to pay my respects to Baba.
That's what's up,
Amos Wilson.
That's what's up.
He's a big influence on me as far as like the way that I deliver, the way that I write and articulate myself.
Mm-hmm.
And he taught me sanity. You know, him, you know, mm-hmm. Dr. Khaled Muhammad, Steve Coakley,
mm-hmm.
as far as like research goes and just like the no let up thing. Cause I ain't bought that shit up in a minute.
No let up.
Just not letting up on these niggas.
Not one bit. And
to me, like, and I keep getting my ass put off social media. I'm at a point like going into this being solution oriented with my thoughts and my actions.
Mm-hmm.
It's using a practical application of the knowledge and information that I learned, applying to myself, taking. And I like the fact that, you know, you grow over time. And at this point, I don't care what niggas who they in bed with. That's not my business.
Right.
But it's something vital that can be beneficial to myself, because I seen you post it and they jumped down your throat for the Tommy Sotomayor with him going on Tommy and then the Candace Owens video.
Mm-hmm.
It was at your neck about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you don't give a damn.
Oh,
but it's interesting to see the response of the insanity that people, their reaction, they're triggered
mm-hmm.
by it.
Mm-hmm.
So speak on like some solutions that you can offer, like just from your own perspective and the work that you're doing. What are you doing to bring solutions for our people?
Well, for one, like, really just with my posting, I say that. Like, I'm trying to get motherfuckers to think, in a sense, but and second on that, I'm running case studies. Mm-hmm. Again, because like I said, the what I do in society, I agree with some of Candace Owens says, because I see the end result with our youth, of people I work with. So again, with that, I can't really dwell much into what I'm doing, like with my work. But one, I help mm-hmm. I help young people get jobs. That is one of my solutions. Really, mm-hmm. I like what I do. I help young people get jobs. I also teach young people how to be counselors. So again, I'm teaching, and I go extra hard for my young blacks. So in a sense, I'm getting young black people jobs, teaching them how to be professional. You know, in a sense, to keep their jobs. As well, enlightening them just on the knowledge through our conversations, helping them regulate their emotions, as well as like, you know, while at a job and just in their personal life, of not blowing up on niggas and or just blowing up on anybody and jumping out the window, as we may say, because that's a big issue mm-hmm. with our people, as we see on social media. They're quick to jump out the mm-hmm. window. You should never let nobody get you that amped up, especially another black person, mm-hmm. you know. So more so with that. Spreading culture through my clothing, just educating people on our symbols. That's really like the backline of my clothing is just spreading culture, using our ancient symbols to spread culture and spread knowledge, and provoke conversation, because I'm all about conversation,
mm-hmm.
And just building.
Mm-hmm.
So with that, through my videos, the content I choose to produce, just educating black people in a sense, but still making it entertaining. Putting the spotlight, showcasing other black people's businesses or just what they're doing, building community, having conversation. Myself more so, I'm gonna be doing some more case studies. Well, it just got cold. So once the sun comes back out, we'll be doing more case studies in the street, educating people mm-hmm. in the street as in a sense of just provoking thoughts and conversation, but it's still in the sense of Africanness. It's just not over the top of I got a flag and a dashiki or some combat boots and shit on. Like, I'm not with that. I'm a regular guy who knows he is an African, and I know we have issues. And based off my experience, I know what I want to do to get what I want to see, because we can't put a gun in nobody. We can't beat nobody up. We can't force nobody to do nothing. And we have to be in the streets. So, like, again, like me, as you see me, I'm in the streets. I be in the streets solo selling my shit. And that's one thing, again, I don't see these in other insane Negroes who got so much to say. I don't see them in the streets. They're not in the streets. They going to work, you going home. Nothing wrong with that, but it's like, let's not criticize. Because, again, as you said earlier, like, I don't. Niggas gonna, I accept it now. Like, niggas is gonna do what niggas is gonna do. You know, I don't, that's not my forte, but let me do me. But we do have problems in the community. So again, like with the Candace Owens, they don't like her. I don't give a damn she dated a white man. Tariq wife is a mulatto. Niggas still listen to Tariq. Niggas still buy him color. Mm-hmm. Like, but if somebody's right, they right. Like, I don't gotta like their dating preference. But she's speaking some real shit. Black people are killing black people in these communities. We're not going to try to do that old excuse. That's black on black crime. That's fake. Fuck all that. Black people are killing black people in their community. They're shooting black children and black women. Black men are. Black women are constantly having babies out of wedlock. 7 out of 10 black children are born out of wedlock. That's 70%. And that's just saying out of wedlock. Most of the time, they're born to single mothers. No father around. So you're sleeping with unstable men, men who cannot provide a future for their children. That's a problem. Mm-hmm. We have people on welfare seeking benefits. Section 8, niggas in the hood on the urban plantation, the democratic urban plantation, terrorizing their own community, terrorizing citizens. That's a problem. But we're going to get mad and somebody talk about it? And that's the shit I'm talking about. Because again, a lot of these conscious men, a lot of them are gangbangers, ex-gangbangers, this, that, and the third, and they still have this mentality. So, and that's to say, we get into like Breonna Taylor. It is a main situation. You're fucking a drug dealer. And we know a lot of these women, these professional women, who date low-life niggas in the street, willingly. Nobody's forcing them. Not saying anything is wrong with it, but don't be mad when you become a casualty or your child becomes a casualty because you're allowing these random men in your home. You're running with this thug ass nigga who's overage and still in the streets beefing with other black men. And now you're caught up in the crossfire of bullets. So we don't never talk about shit like that because it's not the white man killing them. It's not the white man coming through doing drive-bys. Why we don't want to talk about that? So I was like, I agree with Ken Solis saying, again, because I work with these youth. So I see the end result of them. I work with women clients who do not trust black men because most black men have failed them, starting with their fathers. So it's hard to get one to open up or to not think, oh, black men ain't shit or they lazy or they just want to fuck them. That they're going to call them a bitch when they get mad. These are young women. And so we don't think of it. Or black men who, young black men who don't have not a clue in the world what's going on. They want to rap. Don't know nothing about being black. Hate the black woman because what the mothers have trained them and you got young teens trying to be Megan Thee Stallion and running game. There's no separation on child and adult no more in the black community. It's like if me and you are dressing like Blueface, we a young nigga, listening to the same music Blueface listened to, something wrong with us. And it's like, we trying to keep up with the young boys. We shouldn't even be competing with them. Them niggas in a whole different zone. Like, but it's like now it's no separation. You got 35 and 41-year-old niggas in the club with young 23-year-old women. a lot of it is what Shahrazad Ali was fighting in the 90s. We are seeing it. Like Vivica A. Fox, like she was shit on Q. I didn't know Vivica was 56. It just slipped my mind. But you got 50-year-old women hitting 60, black women with no husbands. Still running around trying to keep up with our age people, young 30-year-olds, late 20s, trying to blend.
We got children and grandchildren, and then trying to get in a relationship with somebody like me and you.
Right.
And they like in their late 30s, early 40s, or don't have children.
Right.
Like, I can't find a good man and be like,
is the man, are the men a problem, or is your choices of men the issue?
Exactly.
That's why I like the brother you put me up on, Kevin R. Samuels.
Yeah.
Because he tight with, he just let them talk.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, we need to do more of that, because eventually, like, people going to expose themselves if they talk long enough.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's the thing, just let them talk. Or even I've learned in my dating history, just because my counseling experience, I ask women a lot of questions. I ask them, like, have you been abused? Have you had abortions? Like, no, men don't really ask these women these questions. They ask us because they want to know what's up. But we just be trying to get in the draws. And you got to ask these women, like if a woman that's had an abortion, you don't want to produce no children with her. You don't even want to be with her because she's hiding. She has to deal with that emotional pain the rest of her life. Mm-hmm. And with us men, are you ready for that? Like, is that something you want to deal with? Like, and you would never know why your woman is angry all the time, or why your woman just has such a sense of sadness amongst her, because many of them would not be honest. So we have to go in and ask questions, and it goes, and it's not to shit on women. I don't know anybody here that's to think that. It's to secure a better future for yourself as a man. That's what it's about. It's about properly choosing while dating, same dating habits. And we don't really do that as Black men, which is why many of us have problems, and we don't be able to evolve enough to discuss the things me and you have been discussing on here, because we got child support. My license is revoked. We locked up. You got domestic violence charges. Your baby mama just ruined your life. You got to work at the warehouse. You can't go to school to educate yourself because you got kids, or, you know, all this shit. And at the end of the day, it's because we have sloppy habits as men. Just busting up in chicks. But again, nobody's forcing them to have these babies. And I don't know why these women continue to have these dudes' babies, but it won't be me. So that's why, like I said, I can talk about these things because I don't have those problems while I'm shouting Africa, Africa, or we need to do better as Black people. Because I'm clean. And the sad thing, the standard has been reduced so low as in our race that dysfunctional is cool. Insanity is cool.
Appreciate you, my brother, for coming on. Drop your social media handles and your YouTube, your website.
Okay, for sure. Well, thanks for having me on here. I appreciate it. Appreciate the space. Appreciate the bill. Shout out to you, brother. Social media, you can catch me at Saint African on Instagram, Twitter. I use it somewhat at Saint African. Yeah, saintafrican.com. If you want to find some clothing, you can check it out. That's the whole thing, saintafrican.com, African with a K. You can check out my clothing. You can check out some of the blogs, the press. You can check out, hell, some of the media as well in the media. Saint African on YouTube. You can find me there. Check out the content. We got an Ask an African series. We're just asking, polling the community. I got a few videos out there from Africa. I got a vlog of New York. A little clip, some clips in Haiti, but check out the content. It's very good conversation. Definitely check out the Ask African with Khalid Dessalines, and check out the Ask African with Signature. I think those is proper interviews. And my latest one I just dropped. I got a few more coming, so check them out. And then on business wise, you can email me if you want to do some work, or if you're looking to shoot an Ask African, anything, hit me up on social media. Or you can email me divineoriginal17@gmail.com for my clothing. My clothing account, I don't really use it like that. But you can check out a CobinWear17 on Instagram. A CobinWear17. And stay the course.